We acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which company has been recorded, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation.
We respect their continuing culture and the past and present contributions they have made to this region. Sovereignty was never ceded.
You're listening to Company, the podcast connecting Australian artists,
where we talk all things professional, personal, and spiritual.
Joining you as always are your hosts, Georgia Kennedy
and Tiana Catalano. Hello!
Hey.
Welcome back to Company.
Season 2.
Season 2, 2021. New year.
New me. Jokes.
New us. Not really. We're still in the same place.
Yeah. Still in Perth. Still at university.
Trying to finish it.
Trying to finish.
Yeah, I actually wasn't that excited, to be honest, when it hit midnight. I was like, nothing's really changed yet.
I was excited for like the rest of the year, but right now, there's still COVID, there's still no vaccinations, there's still lockdowns, there's still, you know.
Yeah. We actually did this interview last year at the end of the year.
We did.
And, you know, we were due to release it at the end of last year, but I don't know. We were kind of really tired. And if this year has taught us anything, it's like, if you don't feel like doing it and there's nothing that's going to cost you, you know, like just do it when you're ready. Because we were both freaking exhausted and just mentally spent. And we really needed a break. But here we are. And David is back. David's with us
this
year.
David is sitting next to us. He looks absolutely joyous.
He's
so happy to be here. And we hope you really enjoy this chat. It was, first of all, freaking awesome to interview someone in person, let alone three people, let alone three amazing women who have had such different careers or at different stages of their careers and have such different interests but came together to be in Oklahoma. And we had a chat with the girls, not only about the show, but about being a woman in this industry or woman identified.
Not a woman!
So let's do a riff of the week.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Riff of the week. Riff of the week.
Yeah. Okay. I saw The Dry the other night, which has Eric Bana. I actually saw that the Shameless girls posted like a meme of like the best thing about The Dry, and it was just four different photos of Eric Bana, and I 100% agree.
He's quite hot.
He is quite dreamy, I will say. And I really enjoyed, I don't think I've ever seen him in an Australian film before. No, that's a lie. I saw him in Opal Dream, and you know why? Opal Dream came out years ago. My sister was in it.
Oh, wow.
She was like a little pageant girl. Yeah, I forgot about that. But The Dry was awesome, and I don't know why, but I kind of have this expectation of like Australian films to be quite naff, a bit the same. I probably just haven't explored them enough, but I really, really enjoyed it. And the way that it was set up and the things that got revealed throughout the film, like I couldn't have told you what the ending was, to be honest. Like it all kind of just came out and I was like, whoa, that's where we are. And and it was kind of cool. I saw it out in an outdoor cinema.
Oh, beautiful.
So there were like palm trees and like the breeze, and it was really hot that day. So I think it was like 25 degrees that night, and it was just beautiful. I was in a beanbag and kind of felt like I was on a holiday, but I wasn't.
Gorgeous.
I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but also really exciting that someone who we've been to uni with, Sam Collette, is also in it, and he was awesome. He was really great.
Just a trigger warning before my riff of the week. The show that I mentioned does mention sexual assault and sexual trauma, just so that you know and are aware. So you can skip over this for the next 30 seconds if you need to. My riff of the week is I May Destroy You, which is a drama written by Michaela Cole. She's a UK actress. She's absolutely incredible. And it's based off of her own trauma, her own sexual trauma that she went through, and she has written a show around it. But it is probably the most real and raw TV show I've seen. I guess this is quite explicative, but there is an episode where you sort of see her in a bathroom and she has these sort of bathroom motifs. She talks about having toilet motifs throughout the show. And there's one where you see her changing her pad and just talking to her friend, and like there's blood, and it's really, it's just graphic in a way that I've never seen on TV before, on a TV show. So she's absolutely brilliant. I'm only halfway through, but she actually turned down a $1 million Netflix deal to do this show with Amazon, I think, but I watched it on Binge. It's a really great one. It's really real. It's really raw. It's an amazing, mostly POC cast as well, which is brilliant. So yeah, check it out. I May Destroy You on Binge in Australia and also on Amazon Prime as well, I think.
I don't think I've ever heard of Binge.
It's a new streaming site. It's a new Australian streaming site.
How much?
I got a 14-day trial, so okay. I'm not sure. But okay. After that, I'm not sure. I also watched the Nicole Kidman show on it. There's a Nicole Kidman Hugh Grant TV show on it, but I forgot the name, so obviously it wasn't that memorable. But it's got some good stuff on it.
Yep, love it.
Perth was fortunate enough to reopen live theatre at the end of 2020. One of the productions was Richard Carroll's Oklahoma at Black Swan Theatre. It starred Emily Havier as Curly, Stephanie Kakamo as Laurie, and Sarah Reed as the Dream Laurie.
Stephanie Kakamo's credits include Carol King the Musical, Once, Irene. Emily Havier's credits include Julius Caesar with Bell Shakespeare, Dogfight, and Brown Skin Girl. And Sarah Reed's credits include Billy Elliot, Fiddler on the Roof, and Mary Poppins.
Hey, welcome!
Yay! Our first live interview. This is so cool to like see beautiful faces in front of
me. Nice.
Oh, thank you.
And at our uni as well. How
special. I know. Crazy.
So good. So we like to start our interviews with a arts recommendation. So do you have any arts recommendations for us?
I do, actually. So I watched I May Destroy You, that's written by Michaela Cole this year, and that was just some of the most incredible TV I've seen. Some of those conversations I have not seen on a TV screen before. Mm-hmm. And her story is just, it's an incredible piece of writing, and I found it super, super inspiring. Mm. Yeah, that's my aunt's record.
Right.
You've already had her on the podcast, but during lockdown in March, when everything just started, I did a course called Performance Dynamics with Kaylin Howarth, which was the best thing for someone who has nothing to do creatively. It covered so many things that I wish I was taught at drama school and just in life, like performance anxiety, effective practice, pre-performance routines, the mentality of auditions, the mentality of the industry, because so much of it is mental, not just practical. And it really gave everyone who took the course reaffirmed their purpose and their why for why they're in the industry. And so anyone who's interested in any of that, cannot recommend enough Performance Dynamics.
Yeah.
Big fan.
Yeah, we're big fans too. We both did it after talking to her.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah,
so really good.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, similarly to Sarah, what kept me creatively fulfilled in lockdown was this course, this screen acting course called The Rehearsal Room, run by a man in Melbourne named Richard Sorrell. And it's the first screen technique that I've come across that got me out of my head. Mm-hmm. I find when I'm on screen, for some reason, I feel like I'm watching myself and everything I do instead of connecting with the person in front of me. So that was a really amazing way to get out of my head and just focus on the story I was telling. Yeah, I did that for like 10 weeks. It was amazing. I can highly recommend. Mm-hmm. We did it over Zoom. I'm sure now that things are starting to pick up again, there'd be in-person classes, but
yeah. That's so good. Yeah, we got thrown into doing show reels with basically no screen classes. So, felt that. I was like, why is there a camera right next to my head? And why am I looking at a wall to talk to it?
It's a completely different medium.
It is.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Is.
But so much fun. Like, once you like chill and like you're comfortable with it, I'm sure it's like hell fun. But that day was horrible. I was just like, that was shocking. I don't even know what I did. Like, we leaving. Like, it was just,
Especially coming from theater storytelling where it is also linear. You know, you press play on the show and then you run it to the end. But TV and film is just so, like, you shoot the climax here and then the intro there and then those bits. You know, it's so bitsy. It's such a completely different skill that is required.
I really like it though, because I'm like, this is very much not about me, it's about everything else that's going on, and the lighting and the mics and the people in your ear on the side, and I enjoy it. It's something different.
It's true. You worry about less, like, so much happens in the editing room and the director will call Carmen, wants to call Carmen, whereas on stage it's up to you to tell that story and get all the information out.
So another thing that we like to ask is, what is a theatre or entertainment or arts experience that has moved or changed you?
Yeah, mine is easy. Mine's the show that made me decide I want to take this seriously, which was Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. I saw it when I was 17. My mum took me and my little brother in Melbourne. And I remember in intermission, like, leaning over to mum and being like, mum, I want to do that for the rest of my life. And mum was like... you know, it looks fun now, we gotta do like 8 shows a week. And to be honest, she like wasn't wrong at all. Now that I'm doing like show weeks, I'm like, god damn. But that was definitely the one. It just looked like so much fun, and it was just like something that I always loved doing as a hobby, but when I saw it in like a professional space, I was like, nah, it's that, that's it.
Do you ever get that thing? I feel like embarrassed to admit it, but if I'm watching a show and I'm really enjoying it and there's dancing, my body literally twitches because I so badly want to do it as well.
So,
does anyone else get that?
Sometimes my voice, I can feel myself reaching for the notes and I'm like, chill.
Enjoy it.
Just like go on red. My muscles are like, like placing it.
That, and I'll like imitate the facial expressions of what the actor's doing. Even if I've never seen the show before, I'll just like I'll completely be in it with them and just imitate. I'll imitate them without even realizing.
Or feel their emotion. You know, I'm with you.
I feel that, man. I feel that.
It's been weird with my lack of seeing theater. I listen to shows now and just start boiling.
Boiling.
I was driving here listening to bloody Proud of Your Boy from Aladdin, and I was like, so, I don't know, it's moved me like a lot differently this year for some reason, theatre, because I feel the absence of it, and I so badly want it again in my life in a theatre way.
Same kind of experience of realising that, oh, this is my passion. I grew up in Texas in the US, and so we grew up in really, really small towns, so we didn't, there was no like arts around, and then we had always grown up in a very like musical family, I guess. Like, I think the first movie me and my brother saw was Wizard of Oz, and just fell in love with it. But the first stage show I saw was in Houston, and we saw The Lion King, and I had already seen the movie The Lion King, and that was, you know, life-changing enough. But then just seeing what you could do with theatre in that way and create a whole world that, in a way, I just never knew was possible. And it absolutely blew my six-year-old mind. And I was just hooked from then. And then I think later on, in terms of really being inspired by the kind of roles I want to do or kind of text that I'm interested in, I Cabaret is one of my favorite shows of all time. And I saw Alan Cumming and Emma Stone do it on Broadway, and it was chilling. I still get goosebumps when I think about it. Just like acting through music theater was like, that was just all that was. And it was absolutely unbelievable. So those are my two.
I think we've all had similar experiences. For me, I was 11 and in high school, and I'd done choir but nothing to do with musical theatre, and my sister decided to audition for this midsummer opera. She was Carmen.
Come on.
And my mum Googled it, saw there was a children's chorus, and asked me if I wanted to do it. I did everything my sister did at that time, so I said, of course. And we got in, and it was then at the time just crazy, like thrown straight into the deep end. Like music rehearsals was the first thing we did, and sight reading, which I'd never done before, and I'm 11 at this point. And then into the backstage stuff, the dressing rooms, the putting on makeup for the first time, getting costume fittings, and then just doing it. And I still remember the feeling. It was really, really scary and terrifying, but there was something about it that made me want to come back and do it again. There's something really exciting about pretending to be another person and being super theatrical. It was Carmen, so everything, you know, it was really dramatic. And then I didn't stop. From there, I did another opera, and then I started to do musicals in schools, and it just kept going and going and going. So, yeah, I was kind of just like learning how to swim. I was just someone threw me in the pool and just went swim.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you're still swimming.
Yeah. I've swum a couple of times, but
oh, that's so good. And our last kind of like quick fire question is, what is your best mishap story?
Experienced a fun thing.
I thought you were about to stand up and reenact it then. I got super excited.
It happened last year. I was doing once with Darnhurst Theatre Company and Falling Slowly, the iconic Oscar-winning song. That scene, it comes about because girl pulls out a piece of music out of guy's pocket and she says, oh, you write music, and then she plays it. They sing together, magic. In this particular show, Toby Francis, who was playing Guy, forgot to preset the music in his back pocket.
No.
So I go to run to grab it out of his pockets. It's not there. I just look at him and we both, the fear in our eyes, how do we continue to tell this story? How do we get to the next scene? So I just started saying my lines, and instead of saying, oh, you write music, I was like, do you write music? And he was like, I'm not doing this. And I just sat down at the piano scene. I said, you stuffed up. You're saving this scene. And he, thank God, he's a very, very clever man. He walked up to me and he gave me the four chords for the song. And he just said, here's the four chords. And so I just started playing. And we worked our way through it. And eventually I started humming harmonies because I didn't know the words. And then eventually we got to a point where we were both singing it and I was playing the original stuff, and we got to the end and it was the best we had ever done.
Of course.
Yeah. There's no way we could reenact it. And the audience just, I could hear weeping, I could see people crying because it was just so organic. So that was, I mean, I've had a lot of mishaps that have not turned out as well. that was pretty magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so beautiful. My story is nowhere near as good. Last week in shows for Oklahoma, the scene where Judd comes, where me and Judd are in the smokehouse and he fires at Curly, and as he fires, I grab his hand and push his hand up so he fires up to the ceiling. And in this one, he fired and the barrel of the gun fell off. So he was just holding like a gun handle. And the gun fire went and the barrel of the gun was on the floor. And I was I think it was in a preview or something, and then the next bit is I pick up the gun and I show him how to shoot something else, and I'm like, I wish you'd let me show you something, and I'm like trying to put this gun back together, like fuck, and then I just like use my big hands to like hold the two pieces together, and I'm like bang. But me and Andy did a good job, we didn't break because we could have laughed, but it's a high tension scene, you know.
So I when I was 11, I was a ballet girl in Billy Elliot, and there's a one of the songs, Solidarity, we're like all holding chairs, which is what we dance, like our ballet bar, and we're all in a single file line kind of doing like high knee runs all in a single file line towards the stage, and then we go out. For some reason, the girl who was like second from the front just like went too hard and got knocked back from the girl in front, and the chair in front of her hit her nose, broke her nose.
What?
No.
then it caused a domino effect.
No.
So she got knocked back. She knocked the girl behind her, knocked the girl behind her. And so you just see one after the other, boom, 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 all these girls getting hit with chairs. Oh. And, I mean, luckily there was only one nose that was injured, but we were just kind of on stage for the rest of the number. So she's just has blood falling down her chest, down her costumes, and we have these little white tutus.
She kept
just like she kept going, the absolute superstar.
11.
11. I think she was, yeah, probably 11 or 12. And it's like an 8-minute number. Yikes. And she just crushed it. And it was phenomenal. But the visual, I was near the back, so the visual of just seeing one after another girl keep getting knocked back was something. Yeah, what a legend.
Wow.
That was funny.
I wonder what that looked like from the audience as well.
Just stop the show.
I can't believe they did it as a child.
Yeah. I know. I think there was a point where, like, she came round and they were like, a chaperone was like about to pull her off. She's just like, no, I'm gonna do it, and then just finish the number. And we all just absolute like fell to our knees at interval, applauding her, and we're like, you're saving grace.
You are the one.
So I'm loving the female energy in this room. I'm going to ask about, you know, have you ever felt pressure to act a certain way as a female presenting person within the industry, and how important do you think it is to challenge and question gender norms within the arts industry?
I would say more broadly, as a woman of colour, I feel like that stereotype has many different facets that people expect you to adhere to. Like, it still is a thing, you know. Like, I've been cast for stuff on TV that, like, the character is described as butch, and I'm like, okay. Mm. Like, that's not something I would describe myself as, but being, like, a short-haired brown woman on screen, it's like, well, you're strong. That's the stereotype that we're going with. So you're like a butch strong police officer, or you're like a badass angry prison person, you know what I mean? So
I do.
So I find that the stereotypes of being a woman of color are kind of the endless tropes that I feel like I look at. Yeah,
it's interesting. Because I'm doing a show at the moment where I have to play quite a glamorous woman. And as a person of colour, my first thought being cast was going, oh, crap, I can't do this. I'm a short person of colour. I don't, you know, that role should go to the tall, leggy, blonde person. So to be taught that you're going to be the butch person or be sort
strong
of,
or angry.
Or the strong or the angry. And then, and you know, be able to shed that and be the glamorous, beautiful, you know, character.
Love interest.
Is crazy, because I actually didn't realize that I had these sort of ingrained things in my head of what I am to be on stage.
Totally. And that's like representation in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's like, if you have never seen a brown woman be like, I don't know, the apple of everyone's eye, the romantic interest, then like, how could you ever represent
There's no reference point.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I think it makes me want to just, like, I find acting such an inherently disempowered craft. Right. Like, I love performing, I love acting, love it. And we're waiting for jobs. And when we're not waiting for auditions or waiting for agent to call or waiting by the phone to hear if you got the job, when you get the job, you're like, someone else does your makeup, someone else does your hair, someone else tells you what to say, someone else tells you what accent to speak in, someone else tells you how they'd like you to present it. Like, the list literally just goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And as I've worked more and more in this industry, I'm just like so bored. I'm so bored. I don't, like, I'm so good at shape-shifting. Like, I know that. And also, like, it just makes me ache for creative power. Mm. And so that's kind of why I've taken to writing. I mean, I feel like I've been writing in a sense for my whole life, like just expressing stuff in words. But I'm writing this TV show at the moment about my life with two other women of color. And it's like, you know, the first time you get to like fully explore like your vulnerabilities as a living, breathing human woman, and you're of color, you know what I mean? It's like the first place where I'm like, okay, I can write myself. Like, mm-hmm. I don't I don't need to wait around for these stereotypes much longer, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Completely authentic.
Yeah. But the stereotypes are also a stepping stone to success. Like, I understand that at the same time. So it's like one part your job and one part offensive and one part you're getting paid. So you're like...
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm a terrorist. You know?
Totally.
Yeah, I've definitely felt pressure in the past to be that kind of ingenue type character, be thinner, fix my nose, thicken up my hair, all the kind of insecurities. I feel like as women we go through and we look at the women in the magazine, but I think I've been fortunate with the roles that have come my way. They've helped me accept myself and my body shape and the way that I look. Like Carole King, she's just a person. She's just a human being. And then Girl in Once, she's a mum. She's got better things to do. Chrissy in Hair was also fun. Irene in Irene was super empowering as well. She's a very independent character. So I feel like slowly the roles that I've been getting and have taught me to love myself more. So, yeah, I feel like I'm slowly letting go of this idea. But, you know, I feel like that's what's happening at the moment. We're seeing beautiful, curvy, diverse women in all kinds of facets of the industry, music industry, on TV, in musical theatre. So, yeah, I feel like it's changing and that's really exciting.
Yeah. There was something that happened a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you saw Chloe Zuhl posted about her, like, skin condition at the moment. And I literally had just woken up, so I was in a bit of a daze. But, like, seeing her come out publicly with that kind of journey that she's going through, like, as someone who's been battling, like, cystic acne for, like, years and been going through intense treatments over the past, like, year, I was like, oh, my God, I'm not the only one. Like, and she works. And it just, like, yeah, and it, like, was basically, like, tearing up because I was just like, oh, that makes me feel so much better because coming up to showcase and everything, you think, I've got to showcase shred. I've got to have, like, perfectly clear skin if, like, anyone's going to tell me, you know, want me to do screen or whatever. And it's just like, whoa, like, you just go down this dark tunnel and then you forget about what you're actually doing. Like, am I spending my time trying to become this, like, Photoshop perfection that doesn't exist, or am I going to work on my craft? And I think it's just, yeah, I'm so excited for that progression, but we're still so stuck in this, like, crazy way of thinking. And yeah, it's so cool that your, like, roles have empowered you to, you know, accept yourself, and that's really inspiring to hear. Thank you.
And I think there's power in talking about it as well, because I feel like a lot of women have these thoughts but we don't talk about it, so to just hear what you're saying, I don't know, kind of feels like a power in numbers sort of thing, and we're all feeling the same way. And I think the biggest thing that's come out of this year for me is seeing how important it is to be a unique artist and an individual artist. And that is what you need to hold on to, not sort of being a cookie cutter performer, because it can take the life and the soul out of what you're doing and makes it about what you look like.
I think
it's so hard. It's so hard.
I think it's especially confusing around the time that you guys are at the moment with third year and graduating. Like, it's such a weird time in institutionalization where you've been in this little bubble for, like, 2 years thinking you're just, like, making art and figuring it all out. And then it gets to third year and, like, the institution's kind of weird. They're like, and now you sell yourself.
Yeah.
And now you get bought by an agent. And now you're a brand. And now you have to think about tax because you're a business too. And, like, it's a weird time to come to exist, to be alive. And I don't think that's necessarily the truth of, like, the reality of what life looks like on the other side. You know what I mean? It does take a little while to settle in to, like, what life looks like now, and deinstitutionalization is real. Like, it takes time. But, I can't remember the end of that thought.
You don't have to know right now what you are, what your brand is. You'll figure it out as you audition. You'll change as well. What you are now is not what you're going to be in a year's time.
No, no.
Yeah.
6 months. So I think it's okay to just be okay with not knowing.
And also, like,
I really want to like embrace that thought that like the brand is not just like the visual, because I think that's what you get. It gets focused on. It's like, okay, well, you look like the bitchy high school girl, so that's what we'll typecast you as, or whatever.
It feels like it's 90% visual sometimes in the industry.
And I'm just like, okay. Well, me as a person, if you would talk to me for 5 minutes, you'd find out a lot more.
Yeah.
So I think it's like putting that as more the important thing. And I guess, you know, not everyone has the luxury to talk to agents to be like, this is who I am, this is what I stand for, and this is the kind of art that I want to do, despite what I look like. You know, it's going to take time, and yeah, it is scary.
Of course. But
whatever's meant to happen will happen. I guess we just have to think that. So, yeah.
And when I watch art, I'm going, I don't care what you look like. I just want to see the story that you're telling. I think if we speak to other people, we realize that everyone feels the same way. We just want to hear and see beautiful stories.
This is something really small, and it may seem silly, but even in Oklahoma right now, I'm wearing a pair of jeans, and you've got to breathe. You've got to breathe on stage. You have to feel the space. And I do feel a little self-conscious in jeans as a person, you know? And I just remember saying to myself, no one's going to look at your tummy, and even if they do, it doesn't matter. You need to tell the story. Don't sacrifice telling the story, the sound of your voice, your technique for what you're looking like. So I walk out there every day, I touch my stomach before I go on, say I love you, and then I walk on stage. You know, I just think it's so important.
Because
everything else outweighs the little insecurities. But that wasn't me. Just take time.
And that's crazy, because I had the exact same thought. For we did a chorus line for our last production, and I sang What I Did for Love, and I'm wearing these like really tight booty shorts, and like the belly is out, and I'm before I go on stage, I was like, you have to breathe, your belly's going to be out, it's going to be sticking out. You're sharing this moment with the other people in your class and telling the story of what you're sacrificing to be in this industry. It doesn't matter. It's okay. But literally the same thought.
Why do we think it's not okay to represent?
Women
with
stomachs.
So
what is it like?
This is what I look like.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Totally. That's a beautiful, beautiful. I'll take that with me then. Pulling your belly, that's gorgeous.
Helps me
see.
Exactly.
She does a lot for you.
She does.
Yeah.
She loves me.
What about you, Sarah?
Typecasting women in the industry. Yeah. Interestingly, I did want to bring up Laurie, like in the answer to this question, because Laurie is in a succession of certain era of musicals of a very particular kind of woman that was written by a man whose goal is not about her own character development. And we see that everywhere. And I don't know what, one of my favorite things is that like Laurie enters with that cap at the start of the show, and I just freaking love that. A backwards cap. Like it's just what's incredible. And what I've loved about the Laurie that like you and Richard have created is still how vulnerable and in touch with her femininity she is. Like, because there's such a, I think there's such an instinct to move away from that, because it might adhere to the stereotype that has always been. But one of the biggest things that we're trying to say is that like a woman is a whole person from vulnerability to strength, and like she can want her own character development as a person, and want love and want femininity and masculinity and strength. And that's what I love about what you two have created and from the many, many, many different costumes that she wears to the different thought processes she goes through about what's going to make her happiest or the person that she loves the happiest. That's what I love about it. And I think me looking like really, really young has always worried me a little bit. And I think it's been the reason that I have really always wanted to play like really strong, defiant feminist roles, because I do look so young and I do look very
yeah, like baby face, and which can point to vulnerable, which can point to feminine, which can point to weak. Mm. And so I think because of that, I have always instinctively tried to go to the opposite end of the spectrum to my own detriment. And I think the battle with me is kind of showing to a panel that I can be all of that. Mm. And not to take my, yeah, take my looks at face value. Mm-hmm. And because all I want to see on stage are real people and real mm-hmm. women, and who want more than just other people's happiness and
children
mm-hmm. and a partner, and who are just as vulnerable and confused and weak as they are strong and certain. That's all I want. So it's great to be a part of something right now that shows that. Mm. And I feel really lucky to watch that every night.
Yeah. And on that, we wanted to ask you in general, how has your experience been with Oklahoma and like tackling such traditional musical theater and just like absolutely turning it on its head? And yeah, I saw it and it was, oh, I had the best time. And it was just so camp and fun. And yeah, how has it been?
Yeah, it's been like a lot of fun, basically. But I mean, the text itself, you know, it's written in the 1940s by two white men, and it is of a time period. Mm-hmm. And so there are plenty of like character motivations and scenes which are just so stanky of the patriarchy. Like, you know, like even the scene between Curly and Laurie, like, where Laurie's just had this super traumatic interaction with Judd and he's gone flipped on her, and Curly comes in, sees that she's crying, she's super upset, and then he goes, "Here, I'll show you," and he kisses her. As if to say that a man's kiss is going to fix you when you're upset, or that's, I don't know, it's just like not the most sensitive choice. You know, male savior complex. We were just so bored by that. Mm-hmm. So we spent a lot of time like kind of nutting out how to approach this in a modern kind of framework for our headspaces. Mm-hmm. But even like the libretto, like the vocal parts, bass, tenor, baritone, women. Like women all have the same voice. Like there's no sops and mezzos and alto parts. It's women. Because women sing high. You know what I mean? Like it's like ingrained in the piece. So we spent a lot of time just like picking out the stinkiest parts and remaking a super queer show. Yeah. And we really actually have made a little community. You know, Richard talked a lot about vulnerability and the sense of community and making safe spaces. And in doing that in the show, I think also the cast has really reflected that in the way that we are with each other. So we're having such a lovely time. Like we really are having the best time, both on stage and off stage, which is gorgeous. Yeah.
So cool.
This has also really been a unique experience in terms of the process. Like a lot of it has really felt like a workshop, interestingly. It's felt like we've made a lot of this show from the ground up, both in terms of the choreography and in the direction. Like most of my experiences, and usually in MT, like you show up in terms of choreography, like you show up day one, here's what you're doing, you learn it, you rehearse it, you perform it. Both with staging and with Corey, we were changing and rechanging right up until opening night, and it was stressful, but it also meant that everyone was just so clued in every single time, because we knew that this was all being rechanged for a purpose, and it just meant we were just hyper-focused on what was going on. Mm. And it also meant that, I've said this to you two before, but like with how Richard's worked and how we've kind of workshopped the whole thing, it's meant it's very much as has been Steph's Laurie and Emily's Curly and Andy's Judd, and it's been a very like company specific show, if that makes sense. It really hasn't felt like, okay, here's the text we're doing and now we're going to interpret it and put it on. Even though the script and score is already there, plus the score has been rearranged completely, so it doesn't sound anything like
I've heard before.
Yeah.
So it's very much felt like a workshop, which has been awesome.
Yeah.
It's a really unique experience.
Mm. Yeah. And one of the things I loved about it is how everyone was involved in the creation of the music on stage.
Mm.
Like at points, everyone was kind of like doing something to create the sound and like the band coming on the stage. And I was just like, oh, this is just so joyous and beautiful to see. And everyone's clicked in. And yeah, you don't see that too often, I feel. Like, yeah, maybe I've seen it couple of times at the Haze, but like with those big productions, you don't see those.
Totally. I think Richard as a director is really clued in to what the magic of theater has for people, you know what I mean? Like to not shy away from the fact that we're in the round, we're all in this space, you're all within the community. Tonight you're at the Box Social too, you're coming to a hoedown, you're coming on stage even if we can't touch you legally, you can still do it a hoedown with us, you know what I mean? So he's been really he's such a great director. It's such a, it really is such a joy to work with him, and he's very smart in that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys have said most of my thoughts. they resonate a lot with me. I think it's just been so much fun to challenge norms in every kind of facet. And I think, yeah, Richard's a very good casting director. And day one, I think, we were all at some point just in tears. Everyone was very open to honouring this story, putting a queer lens on that and honouring that and realising the gravity of that and who was going to come see the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think from the get-go, it's always been about the bigger picture when it comes to the music, the costumes.
No costumes.
The lighting set, everything.
For the costumes.
It's just all fed into this beautiful reimagined version of this show, and it is an honour to be a part of this and to work with everyone. Everyone has had such a beautiful, strong voice and point of view on the topic that has influenced what the final result is, and that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And there's also something to be said about this being the first creative thing that all of us have done in
all year.
Yeah. And it's meant that everyone's a little bit more present. Everyone's a little bit more grateful. Everyone's a little bit more emotionally connected to everything.
Totally. Yeah.
And so I think a big part of that was not just on the first day, we saw a whole new type of fear that we had never seen on. We had never seen such a queer lens being put on such a heteronormative show before. But also we just like hadn't heard music in a rehearsal room before that no one else had heard. Like we're the only people in the world who have heard this right now.
Yeah.
And we all just felt the immense gratitude being able to work on something creative
totally. Like when Emil, we did quarantine as well. And I remember FaceTiming Andy Cook in quarantine. We didn't know each other yet, but we were like, the vibes are good. Do you want to hang out? Like, let's get drunk. And so we had this like 3.5 hour happy hour. It was like, and he was like, I remember him saying, babe, like I haven't hugged any of my friends in 8 months because he was living in Melbourne and I was like in Sydney and I was like, oh my God. Like, it's like so extra lovely to be able to be in a space where you can touch, you can sing without, you can sing, you can rehearse without face masks, you know, like that's a joy. You know, Perth is the wild, wild west.
It is, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if it would have had this kind of energy and the weight to it if COVID didn't happen. I feel like the timing of this has been exactly
pretty magical.
And I hope, like, fingers crossed, it's gonna be over east at some point next year, hopefully, and that people can experience that magic that was made here, because it really is magic. It's so special. It's awesome.
And on that, what brings you the most joy as an artist?
I figured out what brings me the most joy as an artist when on the last time we performed Brown Skin Girl, which was this show I wrote with two other women of colour, and it was very spoken word poetry about the experience of being a woman of colour and growing up in Australia and kind of just unpacking race and what the hell is going on. And to perform to like a room of like diverse mixed race Australian young people and then have conversations in the foyer afterwards about race in Australia, and because the show is so deeply personal and super open and specific to our context and our lives, you know, something happens with storytelling. With the more specific you get, the more universal the story becomes. Yeah. Like, there's something in the specificity of storytelling that when it's really specific, it allows the person in to kind of see their own life. And mm-hmm. So so many people came up to us after the show and were just like pouring their hearts out about their experience with race or their experience in Australia or whatever else. And that was the first time that I was like, this is the reason that I'm doing it. Like, mm-hmm. to really feel the fact, like, when I stand on stage, it's like so much more than myself. You know what I mean? Like, the weight and the weight of the representation and the lack of it makes my presence in this industry like just double fold important to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was like kind of the first time, which was probably like beginning of 2019, that I was like, and this is why I do it. Okay, all right. Yeah. So that's what brings me the most like deep fulfillment, is like being able to represent others, to tell a story that's not been heard before. And
connection with audience, like really connecting. I get you,
like truly connecting, you know, like people have never seen themselves on stage before, let alone seen something which totally unveils the way that they even think about the world, you know. Like, I remember this one old guy came up to me after the show and he had his sunglasses on. It was a nighttime show and he was like 60-ish. He'd come with his wife and he was in tears and he didn't take his sunglasses off because he was like so ashamed of crying, and he was like just crying, and he was like, I had no idea. Like, I didn't know that this is what your experience was. I didn't know it was like this. I didn't know our country was racist. And was like, I was so particularly moved by that interaction, because I was like, this man has lived 60 years of his damn life, and he's come and seen a half hour show that I wrote in a room in my bedroom with two other girlfriends, and like, he is so deeply moved and changed by this. It was like the power of theatre in that moment was just like overwhelming.
It's been phenomenal to see in the audience, because we're like this close to audience members every night, to see these beautiful young queer kids in the audience who have never seen something like this before, especially like with the stuff usually Black Swan does is for a very particular type of audience, and that's not usually for them. And to see their faces, like, especially when we come out in these huge camp blue ball gowns with like fringe.
Sequins from head to toe.
And to see Emily as Curly up on this like big freaking camp horse, just absolutely singing and basking in her power and glory, and see their faces, and I get to watch Over a Beautiful Morning every night because I'm with the band in the corner, and just watching their reactions, never seeing themselves represented on stage before, is everything. Like, it makes all of it. And that's all the satisfaction and joy we'll ever need.
Yeah.
And it's freaking beautiful to watch. But also, I think kind of going off that, like, there's just nothing else I really connect to as much as theatre and art in general, of the crossover between creating a whole new world to like educate about this one and educate and entertain and challenge and reassure and so many different things. It provides so many avenues for what, like, one show and one text can provide so many solutions and avenues for what a particular audience member is looking for, whether that's like escapism from their current world, whether that's like this 60-year-old man to be challenged about the current world they live in their mind. And to show people that have always felt like they weren't allowed to be a part of this world, that there is a whole other world out there just for them. Like, just the crossover between those, I can't find anywhere else. And it's incredible.
I think the moment for me where I realized why I love doing what I'm doing is, it's about the audience again. I feel like it's always about the audience. I never really understood that until this experience. I covered Carol in Beautiful, Carol King, and I went on one night and I got a message on Instagram from this woman who was suffering with cancer, and she said she just wanted to thank me because she had been in so much pain for such a long time. She came into the theatre, and from curtain up to curtain down, she said she felt no pain, absolutely nothing. And she just wanted to thank me and to pass it on to the cast for giving her that experience. And that's when my ego just kind of fell away, and my insecurities, you know, if you bung a note, if you miss a line, if you don't hit a mark, all the silly things that we kick ourselves over, it doesn't matter because we're still telling the story, people are still hearing it, and we're still moving people. And that's when I realized the power of what we do. Because, you know, I have amazing siblings who are lawyers, paramedics, electricians, you know, they're doing like proper things in quotation marks, you know. And I'm singing and dancing, what am I doing with my life? And no, I realized the power of it is pretty remarkable. So yeah, that was for me when I realized, yeah, this is definitely what I like to do and what I love to do rather, and what I do is really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a beautiful story. Yeah. And I guess like we wanted to talk about like institutions, but we won't today. It's like a whole other kettle of fish.
That's a different
It's interesting, like hearing you say that, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's kind of what I feel like we're missing. Like still we're performing for this like achievement rather than doing it for the audience. And I think we felt that in A Chorus Line as well, because it was only invited audience and very minimal, which is mostly students. And it's like we're all on this journey together where we're, you know, working on skills and whatever. And it's totally different when you get an audience of people you don't know and they're seeing this for the first time and you're creating this world for them and inviting them in. And that is just like, it's just incredible. And I can't wait to like go and do that. Like that's just, yeah, insane. Yeah. Another thing we would like to ask is what is something that you would like to say to your younger self, having been through all of these experiences and the journey so far?
Mine is similar to something I said earlier, and that's just be okay and comfortable being uncomfortable and not having all the answers yet. I think when I graduated, I didn't know where I was heading. I didn't really know where I fit. And, you know, I still don't know because we're continuously changing, and that's okay. So just don't worry about not knowing all the answers yet. You'll figure it out. And when you figure those out, more questions will pop up, you know. Just take it day by day.
I think something along the lines of, I mean, I am still quite young, but I guess specifically middle school Sarah, I would say something along the lines of like you matter more than what other people think of you, and your worth is way more than how well you are liked or how approved of you are, I would say.
Yeah, I'd say like probably an amalgamation between what you've both said, weirdly. What you said about like not knowing, like I have spent most of my life, I'm 29 as of this week, and I've spent like a lot of my 20s kicking myself for not knowing and feeling like really bad about that. Like I remember being in first year NIDA and a director asked me to read a play and he asked me to tell me what I thought about it. And I read it and I just couldn't tell you what I thought about it. Like I just didn't know how to have an opinion. Like I'd come from dance school and music theater training and you know, I learned how to not have an opinion at dance. Yeah. And I also learned how to like flex look. But like but you know, you don't learn how to think. And so I don't know, for ages I just really felt like a sense of like, oh, I don't know what to say, because like all that my impetus for saying stuff was so people would like me or so I would get employed, and like that was always the goal. But I guess that it's like, I guess I would say to my younger self that it's okay not to know, and that, I don't know, everything's always working out, even though like there's so many, I don't know, I feel like for ages I felt like I was just like falling head over heels onto my feet. Like I kept falling up. Like when I got into NIDA, I didn't know I expected to get into NIDA. I was like, am I any good at acting? I have no idea. Like I'm literally just out here trying to like be okay. Like, I don't know. Am I good? Like, I spent so many years forming my sense of myself on the opinions of what other people told me I was. And yeah, I can't wait to be 30.
Yeah.
Yes. I feel like the next step of that is to like just drop all that and like become my own version of myself.
Own it.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
So many years worrying about what other people thought, man.
Yeah.
And did you ever feel like pressure of like a timeline as well? Because I feel that.
Yeah.
Like being 25, I'm like, well, how many years do I have to like get into the industry now?
That
you know?
Makes me like literally furious. Like
makes
me so angry. Like I literally refuse for the industry and for ageism to be able to tell us that we're expired at 35. Like go fuck yourself.
Yeah,
I'm
literally.
Not fuckable to you anymore.
Yeah.
I'm furious.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I'm gonna be 60 and on screen, whether we like it or not.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Like,
yeah. Yes.
Ugh, it just makes me want to like make my own system, you know. I've always been so angry at that thought of like there's not enough time.
Yes,
which is why I'm always so excited to tell everyone how excited I am to be 30, because everyone looks at me like I'm a crazy person, because they're like, but why, like you're young. And I'm like, nah, like I've always wanted like the wisdom of the knowledge of the experience, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
these are
like,
an absolute clusterfuck.
Honestly,
and
yeah,
everything fixes
get
at 30
here.
And everything's fine.
Yeah, that's my ballpark idea.
Yeah.
That's what you mean,
totally.
Right? Because
yeah.
The life is perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then our final question that we love to ask is, what are your hopes for the arts industry and what would you like to see change?
A lot. In a great way, though. I think, interestingly, until now, I feel like there was not a lot of communication between just people in the industry. Mm. Felt like there was just this really big, unless you were friends with the person, I felt like there was always just this kind of big silent wall between fellow artists and performers in the industry. Yeah. Yeah, whether that's creatives or performers. And now I'm feeling like those walls are being broken down a little bit more, and I feel a little more comfortable about just like reaching out to someone to talk about like the fellow industry that we're both in. And that's something I really would like to keep see changing. I think that comes to like elitism and things like that. But I would love for that kind of silent wall to be broken down. I mean, there's so much to talk about, but I'm just really keen for there to be more transparency, both in process and in specifically with creatives and producers in the creation of shows, because I think that's something that still is kind of in this ivory tower of this is all made, kind of what you were talking about in terms of us waiting for something, the disempowerment of the whole thing. And I think transparency, both in terms of how that leads to representation of stories, how that leads to a diverse pool of performers in the industry actually telling their true authentic stories and having power in that industry themselves. I think transparency is a huge aspect of that.
And on that, I think there have been amazing conversations this year just breaking down where it starts, and I think it's opportunities afforded to kids in high school, and then who institutions, performing arts schools are allowing into the courses, and that way we can start to filter through more diverse, not just ethnicity but abilities, into our industry, and then that way we can tell more diverse stories, we can have more diverse people auditioning for shows, creating works. And in institutions, there's a lot, but I just think, just off the top of my head, how do I word it? Differing, a wider range of styles of musical theatre. I feel like there's this pressure to be to do commercial main stage musical theatre, whereas it's just not what is out there at the moment, and that's not what people are made to do. So I don't have an answer of how to do that, but instead of trying to change our performers and give someone a certain technique and make them sound a certain way, hearing what each individual person has and fostering that.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to say that. And then have that filter into our industry, which just make it more rich.
Yeah.
I would say, like representation is like the tip of the iceberg. Do you know what I mean? And I think as I've worked more and more, I've just seen how big the iceberg is underneath. And I think I would like to see more diverse people. And again, like not necessarily just ethnicity, like in all the different ways a human can be diverse from what is considered the norm in creative positions of power. You know, like actors are like the front line of representation, right? So like you hire me and you put me on the screen and therefore your TV show gets the big tick of diversity because they've got a quota for what we can see. But meanwhile, I, the actor, am on set of a set that is being completely fueled by white men. Like there's that one New Zealand dude in the crew who I've said hey to. I can see in the makeup room there's one other girl with a similar skin tone who I've hit up on Instagram for a bit of like support. And apart from that, you know, you have, even when it comes to like the spread of like men and women on set, can sometimes be pretty dismal. You know, your women are in costume or makeup and your men are all doing DOP behind the scenes stuff. And I just think like that's kind of nonsense, you know? And so I think as we move along and as I become more of a maker and creator, I want to see the trickle down effects. I want to see the different people at all stages. I don't want the whiteboard rooms, you know? I want to see us at the top of the telling of the stories.
Speaking with other people as well, it's this idea of changing the gatekeepers of arts and musical theatre. Who are the gatekeepers and how can we change them and how can they be more diverse in every sense of the word? Because absolutely, the actor representation is totally the tip of the iceberg. That's the next step.
Do you mind if I add one more?
Yes.
Please go.
I just thought of before, accountability without ego, I think is so necessary for the current systems and people in power that are in place. Being okay and willing to say that you were wrong or you were ignorant without ego and listening to the people that you actually need to listen to who are telling you and educating you these things. And just wanting to give the power to the people who are educating you and letting your ego go and this being a systemic thing, like, yeah, a lot more accountability and focus on the education and change rather than on the losing of the power.
Yes.
Or the hurting of the feelings.
Yes.
Feelings.
Do you have maker and creator in your Instagram handle?
I should.
Thank you so much for doing this pod with us. It's been so lovely to see you in person and get to chat to you and know a bit more about you. It's been a joy.
Thanks so much. Love y'all.
It was so amazing to talk to these three empowering, incredible women and talk about the small things like not feeling confident on stage and worrying about how your belly looks when you perform and all that kind of real stuff that we don't really talk about. It was great to sort of put that into the ether and talk about it.
Yeah, and there is such power in sharing stories and feeling like you're not alone. I feel so fortunate and lucky to have had these conversations, and as a graduating person, think that I'm not controlled by the industry and these ideas that I've been fed are not true, and that everyone is having their own battle as well, like whether that is feeling comfortable on stage or feeling like their time is running out. And we can change that. If we stick together and connect, we can change those things that have been formed for us in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an awesome chat.
Very, very cool.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Company. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know on our Instagram at CompanyPod or our Facebook page. Also, make sure to leave a review on our iTunes or Spotify. Big shout out to our producing team, me, David Duquettis, and our wonderful hosts, Georgia Kennedy and Tiana Catalano. Until next time, see ya!